Welcome to Becoming Church, the podcast where we discuss how the message and movement of Jesus is not just about becoming Christians, but about becoming the church. I'm your host, Kristen Mockler-Young, and my guest today is Shannon Martin, who is an author and community advocate. She is a cheerleader for people that most of the world overlooks, and she's going to help us see these people in our lives differently through this conversation. Shannon also ran for city council last year, so she's going to give us a little sneak peek behind the curtain about politics and how we can navigate this upcoming election. Here's my interview with Shannon Martin. All right, Shannon, welcome to the Becoming Church podcast.
Good morning.
So glad to have you with us today.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I have followed you for years and years. I honestly don't even know how I first was introduced to your platform, social media. That's how long I've been following you.
Yep. Yep.
And we have a connection back to Northern Indiana, where you live, because I have family there. But I think a lot of our listeners, I know our church is in the South. A lot of our listeners are in the South. So what is life like? You can talk about weather or just life in general, but clue us into like a little picture of your corner of the Midwest.
Yeah, I would love to. So yes, I love my community. I write a lot about it. I talk a lot about it. So yeah, we live in Goshen, Indiana. It's a very small city right up by the Michigan line. So a lot of times, I mean, none of us are great at geography, but people will often assume like, oh, hey, I'm coming to Indy. Can I see you? And I'm like, I am 3 hours away from Indy. Indiana's a tall state. So I'm way at the top. And my family moved into this neighborhood in Goshen almost 14 years ago. And that's just been like a really pivotal part of my story and part of what really started to kind of shift me and shift our family into some new directions. But yeah, I mean, right now it's, you know, we're at the very tail end of, I guess we're technically in spring. It doesn't feel like spring here yet. We got a couple inches of snow on Monday. That was unexpected and not welcomed at all.
Yes.
So it's just a little like the trees are all still bare. The grass is still kind of brown. Like it's not a cute time to be in Northern Indiana, but give us a month. Give us a month. But yeah, yes. I mean, Goshen, it's an interesting city with interesting roots. You know, it's complicated. It's like kind of picture perfect in some ways and really messy in other ways. And we love it.
Oh, like most places, I would think.
Yeah,
there's the good and the bad.
Yes. If you spend enough time and pay close enough attention anywhere, you're going to see like complexity. And I think that's always the thing that we should be kind of keyed into and paying attention to.
Sure. Have you always lived in Goshen or at least in Northern Indiana?
No, I grew up in Southwestern Ohio, like near Dayton.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have family
on the other side in Dayton. Look at us.
Oh, of course you do. Yeah. I came up to Indiana for college. That's where Corey and I met. And he's not from Goshen, but he's from a very, you know, a community very near to Goshen. And so this is more kind of his stomping grounds, but I've been in Indiana. I mean, we had a short detour through Washington, D.C. when we were early married. But other than that, I've been in Indiana since college. So it's home for sure.
Okay. You love it there. And you have how many kids?
We have four.
Four kids now.
Yep.
That are getting older.
They're all getting older. Gosh. I mean, just this morning, I had a conversation with one of my kids like, hey, I would like to see your face more. Like as they were we're just in that phase of like, everybody's running around and when they're not, they're in their rooms doing their things and I miss them.
Yeah.
So yeah, our oldest is, he's like off and grown and on his own. He's 30 and he lives.
What?
Yeah. Of our kids were adopted. So, I mean, there's that. And he's the newest into our family. But technically I am old enough to be his mother.
Yes.
But it's wild. When he just turned 30 in January and he lived with us, I don't know, 12 years ago when he first came into our family. And I just remember him saying, like, he thought we were so old then. And now I'm like, you're getting close to the age we were when you thought we were really old. So I don't know what that makes you,
right?
But it makes me even older. So yeah, he's with his family in Elkhart close by. We see them all the time. And then we have our Calvin is in college at Purdue in his first year. And then we have two in high school still. So Ruby is a junior, Silas is a freshman.
Okay.
Yeah,
definitely. And my kids are still younger. We're still in the elementary phase of life.
Yeah,
definitely just moved into the high school and college. Yes.
It's just a different world. I love it.
Right.
I mean, I love having older kids. I love having teenagers, but it's like I have never given birth to a baby, but you hear people talking about, like, you know, that pregnancy kind of really prepares you for motherhood in some ways.
Yeah.
And I feel like the years that I'm in now are preparing me to be an empty nester. Like, they're just moving further out, and it's natural, and it's good, and it's healthy, and it's still hard. You know, it's like you celebrate it in some ways and you mourn it in other ways. So, yeah.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair for every season or every transition, not just parenthood, right? But you're like,
for
all
sure.
right, well, I'm trying to be present in this one while also preparing for the next one. Sometimes kind of looking back at what was at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. Just trying to carry even the complexity of that, like, you know, holding the grief and the longing and the beauty and the celebration. And I mean, it's a lot to hold, but it's like, that's like an abundant way to live, to try to just keep your hands out and hold on to all of it.
Yeah. Well, I love hearing about your family. So thank you for sharing about them.
Yeah,
but also what I really love about you and why I've really loved following you for so long is your heart for your community. And you love your community so much that you actually ran for city council. And I want to get to that. We're going to get to that story. But first, I want to back up and kind of know how you got there. And so I read on your Substack last fall, you were sharing a story about when you were a kid, you had been canvassing, right? Mm-hmm. Like in poor neighborhoods as a youth group kid.
Yep.
Will you explain kind of what canvassing is for people maybe that don't know? And then what kind of messaging that taught you when it came to other people and how you interact with them?
Yeah. Yeah. That the word canvassing was like when I was in youth group, you know, in my teenage years, that's the word that they used for going door to door witnessing. And, and even the word witnessing is like such a word that it's so specific to like a subset of Christianity even. And that's, you know, my husband and I both, we didn't grow up near each other, but very evangelical backgrounds. And so the language is witnessing was very common and known.
Uh-huh.
Canvassing was like trotted out only on the days that we were going to go do that door to door thing. And I don't know the roots of that word. And I always thought, like, what in the world? Like, why are we like bringing out this new weird word for this very specific thing we're doing? And then when I ran for city council and we had to go door to door, you know, knocking on doors, we called it the same thing. So that's what kind of connected those two events, I guess, in my mind. We would, you know, I've been on missions trips and, you know, I have all kinds of feelings and, you know, there's all kinds of nuance and things we could say about a lot of these things.
Yeah.
But at that time in my life, you know, we even went on a missions trip and went door to door, you know, telling people about Jesus. That was kind of the idea behind it. And I hated it. I was so uncomfortable. It felt so weird. I just remember wanting, like, praying that people would not answer the door. And I'm sure they were on the other side of the door praying that we would just go away and not, you know, a lot of people didn't answer the door. What I started to kind of notice, probably more in adulthood in reflection, you know, as I'm thinking back, I don't know if I ever would have fully put this together at the time. I don't remember. But we almost always went to under-resourced neighborhoods. We were not going to like suburban areas. We were not going to like the cute cul-de-sacs, the subdivisions. We were never doing, never. We went to very specific places. And so what that kind of instilled in me, though nobody, I'm sure nobody ever said this directly, but this idea that people who were materially poor lacked Jesus. That these were people who specifically needed Jesus, and that we could safely make the assumption that there was a good chance they didn't already have a relationship with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so it connected this idea of, you know, material poverty or material lack, or just, you know, being more under-resourced with the idea of sin, honestly, like this idea of being sinful in some way or separated from God in some way, lacking some knowledge that me as a 15-year-old claim to have, you know, like, I mean, and so,
who
I mean,
still lived at home with parents and
totally
like not providing for yourself. And,
No, I mean, and just was, yeah, I mean, just that dynamic alone, I think is pretty problematic. And I think my body was telling me, you know, in my anxiety, in my, like, I don't want to do this, but this is yeah. part of what helps me belong in this community. This is what is yeah. required of me. So I have to pretend like I'm cool with it. I mean, right. I think, you know, that was my body alerting me to, like, something's off here. Like, let's pay yeah. attention to this. But yeah. I didn't have the tools to do that, especially not at that age.
Well, and especially when you're taught, I have similar experiences. I remember even in college doing it, and they made us go walk around the quad. And it was like a challenge, like, this is going to grow your faith yes. and grow your spiritual yes. muscle. And you just have to talk to everybody, because the one person that you walk past might be the person that, you know, yeah. leads. And I just remember same, feeling so uncomfortable. And I yeah. think I didn't have the words either, but I think it was something in me knew, like, we're not going about this the right way, but I'm being taught yeah. to be a good Christian, to show my faith, to show God that I'm serious.
To
about
prove it.
Yeah. Following, exactly. Then this is what we have to do. You know? Yeah. Do you think, Shannon, that there was a loose, like, prosperity gospel tie-in here where, like, if you brought Jesus to these, you know, quote unquote yeah. poor people, that you could yeah. then save them from a life of poverty?
Prosperity gospel was woven in throughout my upbringing in various ways. And, you know, yeah. part of that was just like different seasons of our life and different churches that we were a part of. I spent time, like, actively as a kid, actively a part of prosperity gospel churches. And so mm-hmm. it all kind of muddies together a little bit mm-hmm. in my mind. But I think, yeah, I think there's still threads. I mean, not even threads. I mean, I think prosperity gospel is still pervasive in so much yeah. of our theology. I think it's just, it's so present that we don't even always notice those connections. But yeah. 100%, I think that was part of what was happening.
Growing up, canvassing, or just in your religious experience, evangelical, what was the narrative that you remember about people? Like, what was the narrative mm-hmm. that you took away yeah. about, like, this is people in the world?
Yeah. I believed that there were good people and bad people, and that mm-hmm. I was mostly good. Mm-hmm. That okay. is, like, my overarching. And again, I don't imagine that anybody ever framed it quite in that way, but I was always taught, you know, warned against bad influences. That was language that was uh-huh. really, really present throughout my childhood at home with my parents, who were doing the best with what they had, you know, yep. but that was part of it. That's the way they were being kind of taught and discipled, yeah. The churches around me. And so it was this kind of, like, you know, you stay like stays with like, whatever that might mean. And it can mean right. 100 different things, but, like, we stick with what we know. We are mm-hmm. safer when we are with mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. people like us. So any type of difference is a separation. And, like, depending on the difference, like, you want to keep distance, but depending on what the difference was, you might keep even more distance. You know, it was just this,
yeah.
but then add in the complexity. And I remember this feeling like it didn't make sense to me when I was younger. Add in the complexity that we were supposed to be, you know, salt and light in the world. Right. We were supposed right. to be witnessing to people while also maintaining a safe distance, while also yes. being kind of wary and skeptical of the people around
and
us.
Afraid.
But, like,
right.
and afraid for sure. And, you know, judging them at the uh-huh. same time. And yet we're supposed to be loving them and inviting them to church with us. Right. And shaming them in some ways, right. which I actively participated in high
who
school.
Didn't?
I cannot
yes.
believe I had any friends. Yeah.
Yay for the grace of God, right?
yeah. I mean, you know, kids, I went to a really small little tiny public school, and we went to K through 12 together, and we had all kinds of grace for each other. But I look back on that time, like, not only am I embarrassed by a lot of it, but I'm also just, like, you know, feeling like tender towards my younger self mm. who was given all of these competing tasks yeah. and then it's attached to my belonging within the community of faith. And then it is, you know, like, it just feels so precarious. It's so much pressure.
Yeah.
I didn't even understand my own faith, but I had to constantly pretend like I was certain about everything at all times. Like, it's just too much.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Yeah. And identity too. I mean, belonging was a big part of it, yes. But also it was like, because you are a Christian, this yeah. is the most important thing about you. And so therefore everything else, you know, we yeah. don't even know who we are. Our brains are not fully functioned and formed yet, but yes. yeah, here we are trying to reflect Christ to the world. You know?
That's right. I look at my 15-year-old, I have a 15-year-old right now, and imagining my child being tasked with saving other people, and like, it's just, it doesn't, I'm just trying to get him to come out of his bedroom now and then, like, hang out with me. Like, it's just it's wild to look back on that. And I was in the thick of, like, the world I was in was also like high level of end times.
Oh yes.
Stuff.
Oh yes.
Like, so yep. there was that layer of like, we're constantly in the end times and like, you know, this certain date and this certain date. And I mean, that was very activated within my family, within my larger family, within my community. You know, like the Left Behind series, like all of these, yeah. like the Satanic Panic, like that was my whole childhood. It was a
Same.
Lot.
Yeah. Well, and I think the fear, right? The fear of it all. I was just having a conversation with somebody yesterday about secular things. Cause for me, that was, yes. you mentioned like the good and the bad. For me, if it was secular, it was bad. And if it was yes. churchy, it was good. And it was that easy. Right. And yes. I came to the realization, I was like, I really think that what happened was we were afraid, or maybe our parents were afraid, or the church was afraid, because they didn't trust God within us. I think there yeah. was that fear of like, if you listen to this music, you're going to get pulled away. Or if you yeah. read this book, or if you watch MTV or whatever it was, mm-hmm. that God within us, Holy Spirit within us, is not powerful enough, cannot right. be trusted enough, right. that your salvation is still going to be okay. And looking back now, I'm like, that's bananas. You know?
It really is. It really is. I mean, even when I said a moment ago, you know, the feeling, like trusting the feeling in my body. I mean, I would say as a Christian person, a Christ follower, that is Holy Spirit within me. Yeah. However, I was taught to actively distrust my feelings, mm-hmm. my body, my intuition, my gut, like all of that was like, that is woo-woo. That is dangerous. That is secular.
Yeah.
And just as a side note, you just reminded me of this. I haven't thought about it in a long time, but my best friend who I was in youth group together through high school, and she's still one of my best friends. We live close to each other now.
I love that.
We made a list. We had a running list. We lost it and we're so sad about it, but we made a running list of the things that were described as secular at church. So, I mean, because we had like pastors, I mean, everything. I remember
anything, one time
somebody, everything could be secular. So we, you know, secular music. I mean, the list got long. At some point, a pastor somewhere in our history mentioned a secular Bible. And I just remember clearly us writing that on the list. Like, what is happening here?
You're like, but okay, stay away.
That was such a key word. I love that you yes. brought that up because I have not thought about that in so long. But that was the divide. Secular yeah. music was like, we spent half of our youth group experience being, mm-hmm. you know, warned against right. that. It's
bringing bad. In your CDs or tapes or whatever it was. Did you guys do
burning
that?
Them, pulling yeah. them out. My Sarah and breaking I, the up. Same friend, we made a mixtape to go on a youth group trip once to listen to, and it was full of secular music, but on the, like we dubbed it off of the radio uh-huh. and on the little card where you wrote the songs, we made up fake Christian sounding names. Of every song, in case our youth pastor found it.
That's incredible.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. The hoops we jumped through. Yeah.
That's the list that we need to see. You need to find that.
I know.
That's
oh, amazing. I wish I could. If I ever do, I'll holler.
Good. Oh my gosh. All right. So I want to know, being that this was your childhood and this was your yeah. narrative, now that you're a mom and you've got kids that you've yeah. raised through various stages of life, how did you raise and develop them differently so that they would have a yeah. different outlook and see people in a different way?
When we chose to move our family into this neighborhood, our oldest was not a part of our family yet. We had three mm-hmm. little kids, mm-hmm. preschool, kindergarten, second grade. And we had moved out of a community that was much more similar to the communities both my husband and I grew up in, like very homogenous. And we came to understand, like, both of us grew up in places where everybody around us looked, lived, and believed like us. Yeah. And so that's cozy. in some ways, right? Like if you've been raised, if you've been raised to doubt or distrust or be fearful of difference, that's where you need to live. And we did. And we really believed at that time that that's where we would stay. And then we didn't stay there long at all. We moved over here into a much more complicated neighborhood, into a neighborhood that is rich in difference and diversity in every absolute, every possible way. My husband, Corey, transitioned out of his career and he worked in federal politics. We both did early on. He for longer than I did. So he transitioned out of that work and became the chaplain of the county jail, which is work he still does now and loves. And our lives just suddenly looked different in almost on almost every metric. Our lives looked different. And to most of the people around, like from our former communities, they looked worse. it wasn't just that they were different. It was like,
what are you doing?
You guys have lost your minds. Yeah. we faced a lot of pushback and a lot of relational fallout. And, you know, that we had moments of self-doubt along the way because it was so pervasive.
Sure.
And so that was just that was a defining moment for our family. And looking back over time, I mean, this is stuff I like to think about, stuff I'm asked about. The only thing I know for sure, part of me is always like, you know, none of us knows how anything is going to shake out in the end. I don't know what my kids are going to take away from a very unique upbringing. I don't know how it's all going to come out. I know that a lot of the stuff that I was taught and raised to believe, I don't, you know, so we're always, we just don't know. But I hope that my kids know that there are not good people and bad people. And that they can very easily put themselves in the good category. I hope that our life and the people we've, you know, chosen to surround ourselves with and the community that we have formed has taught them and us too, that we are all humans. We are all people. We are all failing. We are all beloved. Some of us have, you know, struggled in ways other of us have not, but there are not these two camps of people. There is not like a big category of bad influences or secular people like I thought there were growing up. And so that's all I know. Like that's the one thing I feel somewhat confident of. If my kids don't take anything else away from all of this, I hope they take that.
Yeah. And that's big. That's foundational. That's something too that my husband and I are trying to raise our girls in is just the idea of Imago Dei, right? Like Jesus is in everyone. Every single person is a reflection of the humanity of Christ. And so, when somebody's mean to you at school, unfortunately, they also still are a reflection of Christ. When somebody's being mean, when somebody's being hurtful, when somebody's making a choice that, you know, hurts somebody else, unfortunately, they're making bad choices, things that we wish would be different, but they're not inherently bad people. Jesus died for them also, loves them also. And that's a foundation where we can see the humanity of each other and honor the humanity of each other that I think, you know, permeates into a lot of other areas.
Yeah. And to not put the mistakes on a hierarchy, you know, that like I grew up, you know, rock and roll music. Before the time I was secretly listening to it.
Making mixtapes,
Right. Like, I mean, you know, secular media in general, drinking beer. I mean, I remember times being in the homes of some of my close friends and seeing like a six pack in their fridge and being instantly terrified. Oh like, gosh. This is, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. Oh, yeah. Wow. Smoking, cussing, like those were the big media, smoking, cussing, drinking. And those were like the categories of sin that like, if you saw somebody doing those things, they were bad. They went in the bad category. Mm-hmm. And as long as I wasn't doing those four things as a 12-year-old, I got to put myself in the good category and affirm, you know, over time that I still belonged in the good category. And so just even dismantling that because, you know, there are people around us making bad choices or wrong, you know, choices that don't bring them closer to God. And so am I. They might just look different. Right. They might look like different things. Yeah. Right. Or mine might be totally hidden. And, right. And other things might be more visible and outward, yeah. but I've got my own garbage that I'm dealing with too.
Yeah. Level playing field. Makes yeah. a difference.
Yep.
Okay. Before we finish the episode, I want to make sure you know that changing your mind is hard, but it's not impossible. I know because I've done it too. And there are still areas in my life that I need to continue to work on changing my mind. I always try to link up additional resources for you in the show notes of each episode. There are messages you can watch, other podcast episodes to listen to, as well as other books that you can read, all related to the topic of conversation. Today, I've got a variety of things for you. There's a message on being salt and light, like Shannon mentioned, as well as an interview with Pastor Rich Viotis on how to disagree with people without it turning into dislike for them. There are also some other books and things on politics in the church and ways that you can change your mind. If you ever find another resource out there that you think would be helpful, I would love to know about it. You can DM me through Instagram at Kristen Mockler Young or fill out the form at becomingchurch.tv and send it to me there. All right, now let's learn about running for office with the rest of Shannon's interview. Well, Shannon, last year you ran for city council. And I know a lot of people struggle to even get out and vote in their local elections, yes, let alone run in them. So I want to know, what was that experience like for you? Just kind of in general.
It was a beautiful, wonderful, stressful experience. It was not Fair. Something I ever imagined myself doing ever.
Okay.
And I struggled to get on board with it when I had been asked to consider running years before. And it was an easy no for me. Easy.
Okay.
And so this time around, when I was asked to consider again, it was an easy no for me again. And mm-hmm. over time, like, they kept calling in more reinforcements and they finally wore me down because, and I'll say this, I finally found, like, I just was like, this doesn't make sense for me. This does not sound fun to me. It sounds yeah. really hard, like a lot of work.
Yeah.
We had some other just big things going on in our life at that time too. At the point that I was able to connect the dots between the work I do, which we haven't talked about yet, but I work on staff at a community kitchen. I'm a cook and I've been there for almost 5 years. And when I was able to kind of connect the dots to this community of people who I treasure, who are unheard, yeah. underloved, unrepresented, diminished in so many ways, when I was able to feel like that's my why. Like, why would I ever do this? Why does it make sense? I struggled and I still struggle with the fact that our community is increasingly Latino families. And yet most positions of power and leadership are white. And yeah. so I wrestled through, you know, like that was a big reason I kept saying no, like that we don't need more of me. And
yeah.
we don't,
yeah.
honestly.
Right.
But there were not people in this district willing to kind of step into that yet. And I still needed to kind of find my reason. And so when I was able to kind of understand that there was a whole community of people living in this city that do not get heard and that deserve to be treasured and beloved, that was my, like, okay, I'll try it.
Yeah.
And so I ended up, it was a lovely experience because I met other like-minded people who were right yeah. here in my community who I had not known before. And so that's always fun.
Yeah.
And I got to spend a lot of time. I mean, I'm an introvert. This stuff is not especially easy or natural for me, but I was forced to go out canvassing to bring
Again.
That word
yeah.
back around. and it was kind of like, made me kind of nervous. But for me, if I could remind myself, like, I'm just meeting more of my neighbors.
Yeah.
That was a win for me. Like, that was the right way to frame it. I'm not selling anything, including Jesus. You know, yeah. I'm just here to kind yeah. of hope to get more people out to vote because voting, like, voter turnout in local elections is, like, deplorable. Deplorable. Like,
yeah.
20%, maybe.
Yeah. Wow.
And so, yeah, just getting out there, being part of a team. I mean, in the end, I was disappointed that I lost. I mean, we knew that sure. it was going to be a close one. And, you know, my neighborhood is quite divided politically. And so we did not pull it off. That's always disappointing. I always want to win, especially after
right.
investing so much time. But I was yeah. able to see that I still, like, the things that drew me to run in the first place, I can find ways to continue in that work. And that is what it like keyed me into what's happening in this city in a brand new way. I just learned a lot. Yeah. And so the people I care about, the things I care about, I just need to find different ways. And maybe in some ways they'll even be more effective ways yeah. of engaging. Yeah.
Talk more about that, Shannon. I know you kind of mentioned the unseen, unvoiced community, not unvoiced, everyone has a voice, the unheard community that you wanted to kind of bring awareness to. So even though you didn't win, because I know you and I know that that's not going to stop you from trying to better your community. So what are you doing now, or what are you going to try to do now? Like, what plans or ideas do you have to still have the effect that you hope to have by being in office?
I mean, for me, I am particularly interested in homelessness. That's just something that a lot of our friends at the window face, and I've learned a lot about it. And our community does not care enough. We are a community of Christian people and churches everywhere. And it's like, it bothers me so much that these church buildings are sitting empty for most of the week while we have neighbors trying to find little alcoves to sleep in. It just should not, it does not have to be that way. It should not be that way.
Right.
I went to an event just last night, and I pulled this up on my phone because I don't want to read it wrong. It was through an organization called Strong Towns.
Okay.
So there's just a little plug that I didn't imagine giving, but it was fantastic. And one of the things he shared was, he was talking about kind of innovation and what helps places to change for the better. And he said, leadership from the top down tends to be orderly, but dumb. Leadership from the bottom up tends to be chaotic, but smart. And I was sitting there, my supervisor from the kitchen came with me, Crystal. And I just looked over at her like, that's kitchen.
It.
I mean, that's us in the kitchen. Like, we're a little chaotic. And everything about what happens back there probably seems a little chaotic. And it's very bottom up. Like, I love the way he phrased that. And I'm going to hold on to that, because for me, it's all about finding ways to engage leadership from the bottom, from the ground up. One of the things they talked about was, you know, people living in poverty make some of the best entrepreneurs. So what can we do? Like, how can we facilitate some of these things? Like, I have 100 ideas rolling through my mind. And for me, it's just about paying attention, staying really rooted in my place, staying connected to the people around me, being a normal person, who most of the people at work have no idea that I do things like this, like that I write books and sit and talk on podcasts. Like, that's just not how I'm known in that community. And I really like that. I love it. And so my work is to stay connected to them, to stay connected to people in power also, because I get to live kind of in that dual go-between space.
Yeah.
And if I could be a person that like is able to kind of lock arms between both of those spaces, I don't know what that will look like, but I am eager to spend my life trying to figure that out.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It's hard to be in the middle of anything, but I really think that it's one of the most important places that we can stand, you know, in connection and trying to move things forward. And I also think that you have this, it seems to be in your writing and things, that you have this deep-seated belief that people can change. And I think that this is also part of it. I honestly think that this is what's going to maybe be one of the things that drives you to influence people and change the world. And so you've got books and stories of all kinds of different people that you took a chance on because you were willing to be open to them and maybe have a willingness to see people in a different way. But I can imagine that as you're canvassing or meeting your neighbors or just living, you know, life experiences, that you run into sometimes some harder, more oppositional people that don't necessarily want to engage. So how do you keep holding on to that perception that people can change when you run into the difficult ones?
Yeah. I have sort of an inner fiery personality. So it doesn't always come. I don't know if this is like an Enneagram space or not, but I'm an Enneagram 8.
Love it. Okay, that's okay. What I was going to guess when you said that.
Yes. So that's me. So depending on the level that people know me, some people would guess that and some people would not. Okay. But my point in raising that is that I am stubborn. I am really good. And I really see this as I more and more over time see this as a good thing. I'm really good at being angry about the right things, sometimes angry about the wrong things. Like anger is a thing for eights, sure. And I feel it. but I have come to see anger as a gift to me and to the world. And so there's, you know, these are the things like I'm good at seeing kind of what's missing. The other side of my personality is this persistent and stubborn belief that you articulated. I sometimes forget, like if I get too in my kind of mode, I can forget this. I know in my bones that people can change because I know I changed dramatically.
Yes. Amen.
And so when I reach points of frustration of like, how are people so wrong about this or that or the other, or why can we not, you know, come to the same place, or, you know, just kind of those human moments of like, what is wrong with people? I mean, that's something that goes through my mind a lot, and real frustration and beyond even frustration, but like I can tend towards cynicism if I'm not really careful.
Me
of
too.
Just like nothing ever changes and nothing will ever be better. And whatever bad thing is happening in my life, it's going to stay bad forever. This really kind of black and white thinking, which I was raised, we were raised to think that way, right? So
right.
We have to undo some of that.
Right.
If I can take a step back and remember who I was 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I mean, 5 years ago, like if I can really reflect on the movement I've made, that is the best reminder to me that people can change. And then I'm more willing to be patient for it. We don't have to be patient for all kinds of bad behavior. That's not at all what I'm saying. But to be able to see kind of the kernel of goodness, of grace, of mercy, of whatever it is that feels like it's lacking in that moment, and to remember that we can continually move towards that, you know, that we can change our minds.
Right.
We can be curious. Like at the point that I realized I could sit down with somebody, and I learned this here in this community. So I was a full grown adult with a bunch of kids and realized like I'm allowed to sit and have coffee with someone who is so different from me in some really significant ways. I am number one, I am allowed to do that. I am not, there is no guilty by association. There is none of that. And and we're taught in our faith, you know, people will say that's true. And then on the other hand, it's like, you know, keep that distance. So even just learning that I could just sit and listen in curiosity, that I was not going to be fundamentally tainted by that, but also being open to the possibility that like God moves through the people around us.
Yeah.
We see God, like you said, we see God reflected through the people around us. I mean, being connected with people coming out of incarceration and seeing the struggles that they have had, the mistakes they've made, the injustices they've faced.
Yeah.
And to watch how they are actively changing their lives, changing the future for their families. I mean, people can change.
Right.
I have to remind myself all the time because it's hard to remember sometimes, but I just know it to be true.
Well, and I think growing up, you know, evangelical, like a lot of us did, even sitting down and having coffee, right? We could, I think a lot of times it's the idea or the purpose of so that we can change them, so that we can bring Jesus to them, so that we can have all the answers. But honestly, if we're open to it, it's in those conversations when we're willing to be uncomfortable, when we're willing to hear somebody else's lived experience that we truly cannot relate to. That's when God actually changes us.
Yeah.
That's when he changes our hearts and our minds and gives us the mind of Christ that scripture talks about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's formational. I mean, it's slow work. It's allowed to be, it's supposed to be. It doesn't always look glitzy or like, you know, it's going to give some great story or, you know, I think we have to give ourselves permission to be curious, permission for change in ourselves and in others to be very slow. you know, to be able to believe that nothing small is wasted. I heard somebody, I don't know who this was, but somebody a long, long time ago said, God doesn't change, so we must. And that has stuck with me forever because I've always been kind of conditioned to be afraid of changing. Like you establish your certainty and you just cling to that with your whole life and nothing ever changes. But if we're supposed to be moving closer to the love of God, the heart of Christ, that implies movement. And we don't have to be afraid of that. We just don't.
Let me ask you, Shannon, for someone that's listening that maybe has yet to go through, especially spiritually, any kind of rethinking, unlearning, relearning, changing, and they still are in a place, they're listening and they're like, okay, well, I do still believe all the same things I believed as a kid and I haven't changed my mind. Maybe out of fear or, I don't know, the certainty of knowledge, whatever it is, how can you encourage them into, you know, embracing curiosity and change and all that?
I would guess that people who might be feeling that way, because I would have been right there with them for so long, I am guessing that they are in pretty homogenous spaces where they are spending time with, surrounded by, listening to, learning from people who are sort of mirror images of them in certain ways. And so, you know, for my family, it was a little bit different because we physically moved into a new community and into a really special and unique and different community. And for most of that, for most of us, that's not going to be part of this. And I think that's good. And I think it's, it makes it more accessible. It kind of means that none of us is off the hook, right? So it's not like, well, you know, I'm not moving, so this is what it is. What I would say to people in that situation is that you have probably Wi-Fi access and a library card.
Yes,
let's time go. To lose. It's time to use those things differently.
Yeah.
I went through a phase, this was years ago, where I suddenly realized I am only reading white evangelical leaning authors, period. Like outside of maybe fiction, but even the fiction I was reading, I was reading only white authors. And it just hit me like, I wonder why, like, I wonder why I'm doing this. I wonder how I can change it. And so I taped a piece of paper to my bedroom wall. Our house is not fancy. And I wrote every title down that I read that year. And I made sure that I did not read two white authors in a row.
I love it.
That was my starting point. I mean, and so it was transformative in a small way that added up over time. I mean, you know, who we're following on social media, the podcasts we're listening to. And it doesn't mean that it even has to be, I mean, I hope it is like, you know, nonfiction stuff that is specifically teaching us something new, but reading poetry, reading cookbooks, reading like whatever the case may be, like finding different perspectives and drawing them into our lives is a step that every single one of us can take today. And it's impactful.
Yeah. It just helps us. It changes our perspective, right? Of people and, you know,
but it requires intention. Oh, we can't just wish ourselves into that. Like it requires us to acknowledge what is and find just a simple way to fix that. My husband and I, not long after that, I was like, man, you're only reading men. What's up with that?
There you go.
I recommended a specific book to him and he was kind of like, I just assumed it was for women. And he was basically saying that because it was written by a woman. And with a wife who is a author, I'm like, I want everybody to be reading my books. But this is like a conditioning thing that happens to us. But it was a moment for him. It was a moment of recognition of, number one, he didn't even notice. Like, this is just the world he's existed in. And at the point that he noticed, he made changes immediately. Like, he intentionally turned himself into a new direction and started walking. Mm. And so that's what it takes for us to do. And it sounds big, but it's like, just change the degree a little bit and start walking in that direction and change comes.
Yeah. Well, it's a way to show that you care about people too. I know I read a book last year that was definitely written to women and for women. And I gave it to my husband and I was like, I need you to read this because I need you to understand how this affects me and the way that I think, and I can't explain it to you, but she is explaining it to you. And so
Yeah.
Because you care about me, because you have two daughters.
Yes.
I need you to go ahead and read this book.
Well, and I could say a similar thing because I'm the parent. I'm the white mom of four non-white kids.
Yeah.
And even that alone, like, it's not cool. It's not cool for me to be only and exclusively immersing myself in any representation of myself, because that leaves my own family out. You know, right. I want representation in my life because it makes the world better. I mean, I want that for all of us, but also because representation in my life means representation in small ways in my kids' lives. And that's something that we can kind of grow towards together. It just, it sounds like such a little thing, and it's such a big, it was so transformative in my life and so meaningful, and just continued to kind of, it's like your husband reading that book. Corey, I've done the same thing to Corey. And I think once you kind of set that intention, it just cracks things open in a new way.
And then it's easier.
Yeah.
Right.
And you want more of it. You realize kind of what you were missing, and it's interesting. And yeah, I mean, it's just a win. It's just a win.
Yeah. We, just one more story. I pastor a very, very, I'm one of the pastors at a very, very, very diverse church. And, but my whole family's white. I'm white. My husband's white. Yeah. My girls are white. And I love Mosaic. I love our church. I've been part of our church since its very existence for 19 years. But it wasn't really until we had our own kids that I realized how easy it was to stay in a little white bubble. And so one day I was just like, Peter, we have to be intentional in changing this. Like, I say I'm for diversity and I'm, you know, working in this space and we love these people on Sunday, but loving them on Sunday is not enough.
Yeah.
And so we made some small changes, and it's, is like you said, it's little things that lead to big things. When we had play dates with our kids, we made sure intentionally that we were bringing diversity into our house. And, you know, and it's not tokenism. It's not going, oh, let's make sure we've got like one non-white child at the birthday party, but investing in them and having that relationship. And so now my girls just, they actually notice when we go to all white spaces, and they're only 8 and 10, but they'll look around and be like, huh, this is weird.
This feels,
it's normal
feels
for them.
Off. Yeah. I mean, my kids from the time they were young, even before, I mean, this is lifelong work. I don't feel like there's ever a time that I can say like, I totally get it all. Like I've mastered all of this, but when I was in a much earlier part of my journey, even my kids always noticed when they were the only non-white person in the room.
Yeah.
And as they got older, they were able to vocalize more of the discomfort in that. And that's, again, like, these are things that whether we have, you know, whether that happens to be your family or not, like, we all need there to be less of those spaces where when one person comes in, they're immediately uncomfortable. Like, we can all do things to kind of move ourselves towards difference instead of constantly feeling like we need to move away from it. We need more of it. We need to get closer.
And we can create those communities if we don't have them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And if you can't, I mean, that's a heavy lift for today. You can't go and create a new community today. You can go to the library.
Time.
You can go to the library today, because that, like, even through our reading, it increases some of the friction that we're so afraid of. And that helps us along that journey.
Yeah. Shannon, one last question for you. And I didn't prep you for this, so if you need a second to think about it, it's fine.
That's fine.
But as we are heading into a very politically divisive, what is going to be a very tense political season, you have, you know, the background that I don't have and many of us don't have. Is there anything in particular that you want to say to maybe even Jesus followers, to Christians, especially when it comes to this political season, things we should look for or not look for?
Yeah.
I mean, the door's wide open for anything that you want to say to us there.
I think we should be paying close attention to the language and the words politicians and people are using to talk about other people.
So good.
I think they're like, if we set the standard at perfection, or like, you know, our ideal candidate, that's just going to be difficult. But if we can set our bar at, like, we're going to pay attention to, I think the word, this is something I talked about in my campaign for little tiny city council, the words we use to describe other people tell us everything. They tell us so much.
Yes. Yeah.
And so if we can zero in on that, and not be dismissive of that, not make excuses for the words people use, if we can really interrogate our own willingness to say, this does not reflect the heart of Jesus.
Yes.
Using disparaging, diminishing, hateful language. I mean, that's my like base level encouragement. And then beyond that, I would say we need to keep our heads in the game. We need to stay aware of the process. Mm-hmm. Like so many of us, I hear from people all the time, like, I don't even listen to the news. I'm saying we need to.
Yeah.
We can set our boundaries. I mean,
right.
We have to have boundaries. We've got to be able to sustain, but we need to stay aware of what's going on. And if we're going to do that, because that's hard, it's going to be hard for the next year.
Right.
We also need to find our counterweights, which are things that help us to like, you know, we're holding this heavy thing over here that's really hard. We need to hold really heavy, beautiful things over in this other arm, you know, like to keep us centered, to keep us rooted in our lives that are complicated and beautiful. If we're going to endure and get through all of this, we've got to kind of stay connected to the hard things in some ways, but we've got to look even harder for the little tiny moments in our days and in our lives and find meaningful ways to create that rich abundance that we need to carry on. And so keeping track, finding a way to keep track. I mean, I'm literally like, keep a list, take pictures, whatever it is, and be able to say like, this moment right here is sustaining me.
Oh,
this, you
that's
know,
so lovely.
With my family, these flowers growing in my yard. I mean, slowing down enough to notice what's good in our particular lives will help us along the way.
That is so lovely. And you are right. I used to be a person that would run away from the news or from anything hard or scary. And a few years ago, I just was really convicted that like, if I'm going to use my voice for good, then I have to know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And that doesn't mean I have to be an expert, but I have to be aware.
Yes. I'm so glad you said that. That's a tactic people use a lot to kind of silence people like, oh, well then what would you do? What's your answer? You know what? We're not paid to know those answers. We do not have to be experts to care about what's happening around us. But we know the heartbeat of scripture is love God and love our neighbor. Yep. And we cannot love our neighbors if we are keeping our eyes closed to things that affect all of us. Like that's just, I'm so convinced that's part of being a good neighbor.
Yeah. Amen. That'll preach, Shannon. Well, thank you so much for being here. I will link up your books and all of your community things and your Substack and all of that in the show notes. Is there any other organization? I know you mentioned one, or is there a way that people can contribute to the community that you are a chef at? Is there anything that we can do to support your local
that's
community?
That's a great idea. The organization I'm a part of is called The Window Inc. in Goshen, Indiana. It is like a ragtag little, I mean, I'm sure they have ways to donate online. I hope. I'm sure they
will link it up.
And my husband is the chaplain of the Elkhart County Jail Ministry. And so that's that has just permeated our lives and changed our lives for the better. And so that's a great way to plug into. So thanks for asking that.
Yeah.
And
happy to.
Fine Start with Hello. That's my most recent book. Here's a copy of it. It's all the things that we've talked about today. Just these really practical ways of finding connection with each other.
All right, friends. Thanks so much for being here and listening. I'd love for you to grab Shannon's book, Start With Hello, or help fund the community work that she's doing if you feel led to do that. Or even better, think about how you can get more involved in your community as you keep becoming the church to the people around you.